shit. So y'all gotta, like, you know, encourage me the whole way along. Ow. I ain't doing nothing but talking shit. So y'all gotta, like, you know, encourage me the whole way along.
I know you gonna dig this.
Don't touch that dial.
What's poppin', y'all? Konnichiwa and all that shit. Y'all, it's Thursday night, 9 p.m. Pacific Standard Time, midnight Eastern Standard Time, and you're going to get your ear holes blasted on Nestorius Public Radio. Yo, this is your boy, Nestorius, Nestor Rodriguez. And we got a special guest tonight, my man Josh Sabaro. What's up, man?
Hey, Nestor.
How you doing?
I'm hanging in there.
That's good. That's good. We're going to be talking about his book, Porn Again. And maybe the series, Porn Again, the series.
God willing.
And other.
It's what the world needs.
It's what the girl. It's what the world needs, definitely. And other exploits, you know? So what's happening, man? I mean, we've been trying to get this thing together for a while now. You're always hounding me.
Yeah, I mean, I could get booked at Madonna's tour easier than I can get on NPR.
On the Nestorius Public Radio.
I mean...
First of all, you're a publicist. That's one of the things you've done. That's right. One of the hats you've worn.
Correct.
And so, first of all, it would behoove me to have Josh on my show because you have how many thousand followers on Twitter?
There are a good number.
But
you seem to ignore that.
Because
hashtag.
Because I'm retarded. That's why.
Hashtag not paying attention.
Hashtag wake the fuck up. Well, what it is that in all fairness, you have a book.
Yes.
Porn Again.
Correct.
And I feel like, you know, in order to have a guest on, especially if we're going to talk about your book, I feel like I need to read the book.
I would agree.
You know what I mean? That's how I feel. So, you know, I read half of the book while... you know, on a little getaway. And then I, for whatever reason, had to stop and never got back to it for whatever reason. And so I'm like, I need to get
back.
But
let's make very clear to listeners that it is not a laborious read.
No.
It's just simply that you were taking a long time.
No, hashtag slow. No. What I want to say is this. I'm not a good reader. First of all, I'm just saying that, right? Let me preface it. And I think I got through like half of your book in less than an hour. I'm just saying.
Wow.
I swear. So that is a testament to the fact that the book is not laborious.
Right.
Okay. So I got through it in less than an hour, and I'll tell you why. Because it was interesting, it was compelling, it was fascinating, and it was fucking hilarious.
Okay? And coming from you, that's quite the statement.
No, it was hilarious. You're a very funny guy. I mean, you and you know, reading the outline for the Porn Again, the series, and there was a lot of things that I related to. Related to your childhood and growing up. You know, getting picked on, having right. OCD and all that stuff, which we'll get into, but being bullied and being picked on and having to have a razor sharp sense of humor and wit.
Yeah.
And so I identify with that, but you're really...
I mean,
really,
that's where a lot of comedy comes from, I think. I mean, you would know better than I do, but you look at a lot of these comedians are really dark people or had really dark pasts.
You've been abused. There's a lot of pain that you're trying to, you know, shove some, you know, far, far away and not deal with, and it has to come out somehow.
Yeah, the humor a lot of times, I think, sort of rises as a defensive shield.
It starts off that way, yep, yep. I got picked on a lot, and I wasn't into fighting, you know what I mean? Being a Puerto Rican kid, you know.
Well, I'm gay and Jewish. We don't fight. We pay someone else to fight for us.
You write something nasty about somebody.
Right. We keep our hands
You're
clean.
You're gay and Jewish. That's like a double fucking...
There you go.
That's like a double whammy.
Right.
You know?
Which, I mean, talk about being saddled. These little shoulders.
Life's
my
not
5 foot eight...
Life's not
frame
fair.
Can't carry it all.
Life is not fucking fair. Trust me. But then sometimes life not being fair is a good thing.
Well, yeah, I think it pushes you. I think people who are driven sometimes rise to the occasion because they've, you know, been saddled with so much. And by the way, I'm not saying that I've been saddled, you know, comparatively, I'm not crying, but
No, but you know. No, but you were traumatized as a kid, as was I.
Yes.
Okay, let's not fucking sugarcoat it.
Right.
When you're 7 years old and, you know, you're on a school trip in the summertime and your teacher says, what are you, a homo?
Right.
And you are gay.
Right.
I mean, what kind of bullshit is that?
Well, and also at that age, you know, I was 6 years old when that happened. It was actually at summer, at day camp.
Day camp.
And I hated going to day camp, but my mother would send me. Mm-hmm. She said I needed to be with other kids. She still has not been able to tell me. I used to say, well, what are you busy doing? Like, why can't you watch us? And she still cannot account for that time. She wasn't cooking. She wasn't in a job, but nobody can account for the hours.
Right.
But okay.
Right.
So I go off to camp. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, a counselor was the first person to sort of throw that at me. And, you know, at 6 years old, you're not sexualized. You don't even know what that word
right,
means.
Right.
You don't know what action you just performed that elicited that kind of,
right.
of response. So, you know, it took, you know, it's very confusing. And then
sure.
when I finally put it together as to what it was like, oh, it's whatever these feelings are inside me that are different. And I don't really know what that is, but it's bad.
Right. Shame.
Yeah.
Shame. But so why did he say that? Do you know?
I was getting on the school bus and there was another little boy, the one male friend. I've never really had relationships with men.
Mm-hmm.
This one little boy was getting on the bus ahead of me, and I put my hands on his shoulders.
Uh-huh.
And when I touched him is when the counselor said, what are you, a homo?
Did the kid that you put your hands on him, did he feel?
No, because we didn't, I mean, we were six.
Right.
So the kid didn't even know anything.
So, yeah. First of all, that's abusive as far as I'm concerned.
Even more interesting is my parents were on the board of the camp.
Of the camp, yeah.
And of course, now in hindsight, my mother says, you know, if I knew what was going on, but you know, because what you mentioned, the shame, you know, I worked overtime to make sure that my parents didn't know what was going on
sure.
because I didn't want the people at home who loved me to then feel similarly to these other adults outside of the house. And
right.
when you're six, your mind can't
sure.
understand that
sure.
your parents are
Something's
sort of unconditional.
Wrong with you,
correct.
Obviously. So you need to keep that shit under wraps.
Right.
Which is what's fucked up.
Yes.
But outside of, I mean, aside from all that, for a counselor, a guy who's getting paid,
yeah.
right, to, okay, let's say take care of you, to guide you, to teach
mm-hmm.
you, to say, what are you, a homo, is abusive and is out of line.
And meanwhile, I looked him up. I was curious to see, you know, it's interesting when you put a book out there, even though, you know, I changed names and certain details of private people.
In your book.
Yes. But it was interesting. Like I looked to see where some of these people were, and I saw that he had, you know, he now has a nice career, you know, in South Florida, but had changed his name,
mm-hmm.
oddly, like had mm-hmm. legally changed his name to something else. Which I was able to piece together with my online sleuthing.
Right. So what did he do? What did he amount to?
He's a professional.
Uh huh.
I don't like to say, I don't want anyone to be able to identify, but
well, nobody
he's
knows
in the
who
legal
he is.
Field.
Oh, he's in the legal field?
Yeah.
Okay. That's cool.
Mm-hmm.
So okay. So I'm just gonna read like the intro to your series because it kind of says what your book is about and what the series is about. So this Porn Again tells the story of Josh, who doesn't step into his own skin until midlife. In fact, he is a virgin until he is 31. Time shifting between awkward child and uncomfortable adult, the span of our series covers age 5 through 45. Alongside Josh are his amazingly and uncharacteristically supportive parents. Their journey takes them from naive denial about his sexuality to an unconditional acceptance that finds them buying him his favorite porn movies and adult toys at the local sex shop. They add a unique warmth and humor to the program. So your parents are an active character, if you will, in your book.
Yes.
As well.
Mm-hmm.
So let me see. So you were talking, let me see. Was Teddy the first boy?
Teddy, yes. Teddy Smith.
Tell me about Teddy.
That was before the camp experience. That was preschool.
5?
Yeah, I would say about 4 or 5.
So that was like your first, if you were to call it something, your first homosexual experience?
Yes,
okay.
Which is fascinating.
Yeah,
right?
It is fascinating.
The kids would be on the playground,
mm-hmm.
and I never liked to be outside, so I would be in the, sort of hiding in the shadows and, you know, in the cool of the, you know, it's the Florida heat. It's humid.
You're hiding in the shadows.
And
you're
I would
Jewish
just sort
boy,
of sit
wife,
there.
You don't want to be fucking roasted.
And there was this one little boy, Teddy Smith, who was like the five-year-old equivalent of an Abercrombie and Fitch model. Mm-hmm. And he had this, mm-hmm. you know, blonde hair. Mm-hmm. And he was a boy's boy. And there was something very attractive about him to me. And he would come and sit in the shaded area. And he'd say, hey, do you want to go inside and play with Superman toys? Now, I had no interest in superheroes. If they're dressed, I'm not interested
in
them.
But in all fairness, you weren't interested in Barbie dolls either.
No.
Right.
No, I did like to take my sisters, though, and cut their,
and cut
hair,
their hair
off.
Yeah.
So
Teddy would invite you inside
so
to
play
with
So he would invite me inside, and one day I was bold enough to say, hey, I have to go into the bathroom. Do you want to come with me? We went into the bathroom and started. I said, wouldn't it be funny if we were urinating in the same toilet?
Right.
And so we sort of stood there, and when we were standing there with our pants down, I reached across and touched his penis, and he, you know, we're both five, so it's
right.
this sort of innocent thing.
Right, sure.
I don't really understand. I just knew it was, it just felt natural to me
yeah,
for whatever
yeah.
reason.
It's
and
innocent.
We laughed about it, and we were just like kids playing mm-hmm. until we were caught by a teacher, this German woman who literally grabbed me by the wrist and dragged me into the hallway screaming at me and saying, you know, you never touch another little boy.
Shamed you.
Right.
Yes. That word shame, man, it's very powerful. That shame is so fucked up. As I was reading your outline, I was thinking how shame creates shameful behavior, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you're shamed, so then you have to, whatever you do in your life, you have to keep it a secret. It creates this darkness.
It's sort of a snowball thing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it's
yeah.
like, you know, then everything, you know, even when you, and it sort of got to the point because it started so early for me that even when I would think about certain things, even to myself, things that nobody else would ever know were going through my head, I would just feel ashamed of that.
Sure.
Which then makes you even more ashamed of yourself.
Sure.
You know, forget the action, but just what's even going through your head.
That German, you as you were talking, I kind of went off into the shame thing, but as you were talking, I had an experience at a public sexually transmitted disease health clinic that when I was a kid, you know, 18, 19, you're sexually active, no one's using condoms, you know, I'd go get checked up
right.
every once in a while. And there was this German whore, and she was a fucking whore, okay? She takes
like
my,
literally, like sex for
she
money?
She was a fucking whore. Let me tell you something. She took my penis, okay? And I don't know if to get tested for gonorrhea, they put a, and your father's a urologist, so I'm sure
right.
you know all about this, right? They put this really thin Q-tip.
Like a
swab mm-hmm. inside of your fucking urethra.
Right.
For those of you out there that don't know what that is, that's a piss hole, okay?
I was going to say, I love that you're so clinical. I've never heard you that way.
Fucking
I'm
piss.
Saying urinate instead
yeah, yeah.
of pee and your urethra.
Yeah. So puts it, they puts it in, and I know that I've had this before, and she fucking rams it all the way in. Not all the way, but at least more than she should have, and she squeezes my fucking head so that I fucking feel like this. It's almost like sandpaper being scraped on the inside of my fucking urethra. And I was like, you fucking whore. And I wanted to punch her, but the pain was so huge.
Yeah,
right?
That sounds awful.
And as she does
that. You know
that,
there are people who are into that.
Oh,
sounding.
Man. Oh, she
people
was a,
who are into sounding.
She was a fucking asshole, I'm telling you. And she goes in a doctor, what was her name? The Dr. Ruth. She goes, how many times do you have sex? And she's pulling it out. I'm like, you fucking, man.
I like that you just made Dr. Ruth Latin.
Yeah. Well, yeah. She was my, let me tell you something. You
this is what I always say about Dr. Ruth. Like, she's 2 feet tall. Like anybody whose face comes up to somebody's crotch is a sex expert.
Yeah, exactly. There you go. That's it. Big up for 2 feet tall sex experts, man.
Anybody whose mouth is at crotch level is probably a sex
qualified,
expert.
Qualified.
Yeah.
Right off the bat. You don't need to go to college. You're qualified.
Exactly.
Right height. You're
exactly.
In. Opportunity, which by the way, we are live. Let me give you the number to call because I'm pretty sure we have a lot of Josh, Sabara, and porn again fans. So 1-800-893-9562. We'll probably take calls intermittently and preferably towards the end of the show. But listen, If you feel like fucking calling,
yeah,
just
call. If you have something to say.
Exactly.
Call.
If you have questions,
say
you
hello.
Have something
Tell
to
us
say.
What you're making for dinner.
Exactly. Tell us, you know, how long you haven't cleaned your refrigerator. Something. It doesn't matter.
When the last time your urethra was swabbed.
Dude, that is so fucked up. I swear to God. Have you ever... Jenny, I always interact with Jenny many times. Some of you don't know Jenny. Sometimes you do hear me talking to Jenny. Jenny's the board op. I call her the engineer of the show. Hi, Jenny.
Hi, Nestor.
So what were you thinking just now when I said that? Because I wasn't looking at you. But did you think that was fucked up?
Yeah, I'm sorry that you went through that.
Oh my God. It's like to this day, I can fucking like.
So I take it that you're not into sounding.
I don't know what the fuck sounding is, but it has anything to do with that.
Sounding is when people use the medical equipment, which are called, you know, the sounds that I believe is named after a person.
By the name of
yeah,
sound?
Yeah, and the people insert that into their urethra, men, and it. You know, they get a sexual satisfaction from
okay.
that. I see that and it
okay.
terrifies me.
Okay, I, in fucking, if I was Muslim and I died and I fucking had, I forget that Muslim. If I fucking believed in reincarnation, in a million fucking years would I want to come back as somebody that was into that. But by the way, I remember reading about similar practices, and I'm not sure if this is what it is, but where gay men would actually stretch their urethra out by putting a tapered glass rod inside of their urethra to make their urethra, the penis hole, opened wide enough or big enough for another penis to go into.
Does okay, this well, I think that would be an aggressively large
does this,
hole.
Does
I don't
this,
know how you would stick one penis
no,
inside
saying,
another
saying,
unless
saying,
you were a cannibal.
Is but I'm saying, does this sound familiar to you? Is this something that you've read?
I mean... I have not. That sounds awfully extreme and not possible.
It sounds extreme and not possible. But I could have sworn I read that somewhere. I mean,
I don't know.
You can't tell me that gay men do not think of the most creative fucking things on the planet.
Well, it's not what you'd be fascinated to know is that a lot of times it's not just gay men.
Gay men.
You'd be surprised what straight men like to do
yeah,
as well.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And look, I mean, I'm not judging any of it. Listen, whatever I say, if it's legal and it's at least two consenting
of
adults.
Of course.
Add more.
Of
three,
course,
four,
but,
five.
Of course.
You know, I'm fine with it. But, you know, it's not necessarily something that I would want to incorporate into my sex life. But
yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
You know, that's what makes horse racing, as I think.
But how about this? How about, like, you remember back, I don't know if this is still popular, but, like, back in the 80s, there were, like, men being rushed to the emergency room with gerbils stuck
gerbils.
In their ass.
Well, they also, you know, you mentioned my father's a urologist, and my dad, you know, when he was a resident and an intern, he would tell me stories about how men would come into the emergency room with a piece of a broom handle or a bottle shoved up their ass.
Oh, wow.
You know, and of course you ask the patient, how did this happen? And people just happen to have fallen backward on a broom.
Right. Right.
Okay.
Unless you were Amadou Diallo in the early 90s in New York City, where a bunch of police officers assaulted him.
Well, yes,
that's
a really nice way to... That's perfume on a pig right there,
yeah.
Because basically...
Yeah. Well, I slipped on some rice and
my
father's an alcoholic and I fucking slammed
if you're
into
an emergency
a bottle
room,
of Heineken.
Because you've got a Heineken up your ass.
Yeah. How do you get...
You probably put it there.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, you got to give it to whoever thought of putting an empty toilet paper tube close to the anus and have a gerbil run up there.
I mean, I don't know. Do people do that, or is that actually an urban myth?
No, people were doing
because
that.
Because a toilet paper roll could stay erect enough to actually get inside someone?
No. I don't think that the toilet paper roll was inside of someone. I think that it was made so that it would be like a habit trail. You remember those?
Yes.
Yeah. So
I love that you just brought that up.
So that the gerbil could have a tunnel, quote unquote, and go in.
But how would it get in?
I guess you open up your...
You'd literally need to be...
Dude, I don't fucking know. All I know, Jenny, would you need Google to have so much that's true?
You would need to have so much prolapsing going on down there.
I don't know, but I know that
something
it was
could just slide in.
No, I know there was a case, at least one or two in the late 80s, where men were being rushed to the hospital with fucking gerbils, because what they did was they put a string on the tail and then they were able to pull it back out. It was one of those things. Listen, we have gone way the fuck off left field of what I wanted to
talk
about.
We are in a field called left. Okay,
let's pull it back. OCD, like, that's something that someone who's got OCD would nowhere near touch.
Correct. I don't even want a gerbil. I don't even want to see a hamster.
You don't want to. Okay, so let's go back to summer.
They're vermin.
Oh, my God. You got to be.
People have them in their rooms and the little pine chips running on wheels.
I don't mind them. I don't mind. I think they're cute. When I was younger,
I see it just saying urban legend.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, maybe it's an urban
legend.
Richard
Gere and the gerbil.
Right, but that was always a rumor.
Yeah, that was a rumor.
I mean, I don't really buy into that. But.
I thought it was called gerbilization. Who the fuck knows?
I love that you just branded it.
Hashtag
gerbilization.
Okay. Which, by the way, you're a big social media. We're going to jump all over a bit.
Okay.
But you're a big social media whore, so to speak. No?
Well, if you want to call it that.
That's not that.
I definitely am active on social media.
Mm-hmm.
I do think it's a great place for people to share opinions. And, you know, I do think that people get a little too into it.
Right. But you know how to use it.
Yes. I mean, I think it's a great marketing tool and it's a great way to connect with people that otherwise you may not have access to. And some great people have come into my life mm-hmm. because of it. Mm-hmm. I also think that it gives just different authors and different people that I may not have come in contact with otherwise. But, you know, also it gives everybody a podium and everybody, you know, a platform to believe that his or her opinion is more valuable than someone else's. And, you know, I think that you have to find the people whose sensibility you relate to
mm-hmm.
and go along with that. And when mm-hmm. you don't relate to people's, it's better to just stay away from it, not follow them or not see their feed. As opposed to people creating, you know, Twitter wars and these conversations. I'm like, yeah, who has time for that?
Right.
You know, if somebody comes onto my feeds and they don't like, I mean, and plenty of people don't like my sense of humor. And
sense of humor is very, very, it's sarcastic, but it's on, it's always on and it's sharp and it's funny.
Well, it's funny. Yesterday, somebody attacked me because I posted a picture, you probably saw it, of a young woman in a mall, and she was wearing shorts that were so short that I could literally see half of her ass cheeks.
Right.
And I took a picture of only her waist and I tweeted it and I said, you know, this is one of the reasons I don't like to go to shopping malls. And people were attacking me, saying that it was misogynistic and sexist. And I'm like, if a man was in the mall wearing that, I would have tweeted the same picture. It had nothing to do with gender. It just had to do with bad taste.
I agree.
You know, so people
I agree with you.
And if you don't like it, don't follow me. Don't look for it. Just shut the fuck up.
I agree with you. I think that if you're a woman, first of all, a woman, let alone a young woman, okay, a young lady, and you have half your ass cheeks hanging out, first of all, I have to ask why. Okay, and why do I have to see it? You know what I mean?
Well, and then they said that I was body shaming her. And the thing that's funny is, not at all. She had an amazing body. I mean, if I had an ass like that, maybe I'd go to Gelson's naked. I don't know.
Right.
But my point is it just wasn't it wasn't appropriate to be in a shopping mall walking around in a thong, basically. And so it had nothing to do with whether it was a man or a woman or a fucking moose.
It's appropriate on Bourbon Street during Mardi Gras. So people can throw beads at you.
Exactly.
There's a time and place, not at the mall. So let's see. So you were, let me see. You had a fuck buddy, I think you called it, Jacob, which I thought mm-hmm. that's a hilarious chapter in your book. Mm-hmm. So Jacob was a friend of yours that you went on a couple of dates.
We went on a couple of dates and we definitely had an attraction.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, we were not, you know, long-term material.
Mm-hmm.
But Jacob had a few interesting little quirks. One was that he would speak in cartoon character voices
mm-hmm.
every now and then. So all of a sudden, you know, you'd be in the middle of a conversation and he would say, zoinks or leaping lizards. It was like, I didn't know if I was fucking Little Orphan Annie or Scooby-Doo half the time.
Right.
And then, you know, another, like, interesting quirk was that he liked to listen to show tunes, which is fine, except that was how he got off. So basically, he could come only when listening to show tunes. So, you know, I'd have to, you know, gear up the Kristen Chenoweth in order to get him off.
But I mean,
how gay is that?
I
that you can only come when listening to a show tune. I mean, as I say, marrying Liza Minnelli herself is the only thing that could be gayer than that.
I think sex and music can be a little detrimental, personally. I think that when you have sex with someone and you have music, for instance, let's say you're dating someone, right? Not your wife, not your husband, mm-hmm. you know, you're just dating someone. You have sex and you're listening to whatever song. Every time you listen to that fucking song,
it's a memory of that.
It's going to bring you.
But music is sort of a marker of that period. Like if you look back through your memories of life, there is sort of a soundtrack to periods of time in your life.
Always.
And I do remember certain instances. I mean, I talk in the book about a fling that I had with Alan Cumming. Uh-huh. And during, you know, one of those nights, he was playing Elton John, Kate Bush singing, covering Elton John.
He was.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Now, that's some of what I remember about the sex that night is having to listen to Rocket Man sung by a bleeding goat.
Right. But I mean, I've always been leery of, I love music. Okay. I fucking love music. I think music is one of the most amazing experiences that we have as humans. You know what I mean?
I agree.
And, you know, and I love all sorts of music, you know, fuck around, klezmer. I love, you know, rock, classic rock. I love, I'm not crazy about punk rock, country, rap. I mean,
So you're a little bit country and a little bit rock and roll.
I love underground dance music. I love a lot of things, but I like to keep my music sacred is what I'm trying to say. There's no way that you can avoid, for instance, like parts of your life, when you listen to this song, you know where you were. When you heard this song, oh, yeah, I may have been with that girl.
Right.
But I don't want that specific visceral experience attached to Rocket Man.
So do you, back in the day, mm-hmm. when you were active with different people, mm-hmm. would you be attached to a piece of music and maybe say, you know what, honey, let's turn this off? If you knew that she wasn't going to be anything.
No, because I was never.
You weren't thinking that far ahead.
No. As a young kid, most of the times I had sex, it was, you know, I'd have to get a room.
See, because now I feel like I'm going to be conscious of this. Like, depending on if I know that it's a one night stand, I mean, not the Tina Turner.
Does it bother you though? I mean,
I hadn't thought of it until now.
I have this thing. It's like, I don't know. I just.
I'm going to have a list of songs that cannot be played unless it's a long-term relationship.
Like, I actually like Rocket Man. You know what I mean? I like that
which
song.
Which is fine, but Kate Bush singing it's another story. And I'm perfectly happy with Kate Bush singing her own material.
Hello. That's another thing I have a problem with. If you're going to sing a song, let it be your song and let it be good, hopefully.
If you're going to ruin it, let it be yours.
Yeah, thank you. That's well put. I don't want to hear you fucking singing any David Bowie, any Elton John. I don't want to hear you doing it.
I mean, personally, I don't really need music on during sex. I mean, I like
that's the point.
Like all of the senses during sex. I want to hear, I want to see,
That's the
smell,
point.
Like everything.
Present.
And the music does take me out of it a little bit. Yeah. A lot of people like it.
Mm-hmm.
I like to be in the moment and have everything that's going on with the sex.
There you go. That's really my
point. I like to hear people beg me for more.
Yeah, there you go. And you have your own rhythm. You have your own rhythm. So another chapter that you have, you talk about Della Jackson, who was mm-hmm. your guidance counselor, and she was like, you know, one of the first female teachers that you had a relationship outside of the school, and she was a yes. mentor to you. And
I sort of attached myself to adult women. Mm-hmm. I related more to women, and I sort of had a mature sensibility, and so adults responded to me better than kids.
Mm-hmm.
So there were a handful of teachers during that time who sort of recognized there was this difference
mm-hmm.
and took a liking to me and took me under their wings and mm-hmm. sort of got me through.
Mm-hmm. They saw your special quality. You were special to them.
Right.
I have the same experience.
Yeah.
There was always throughout my life a teacher or two. I got picked on, I'm telling you. Glasses since second grade, skinny. You know, what are you, a fucking faggot? What are you, gay? I mean, it doesn't matter if you are or you're not.
Right.
You know, it doesn't.
Right.
Being called those things
right.
creates and perpetuates this feeling of shame.
Exactly.
But a feeling of something's wrong with you.
Right.
That's really what's going on. Something is wrong with you. You're defective.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right. And so, you feel like, and that's why it was hard, like when you were talking about my not coming out or being sexually active until I was 31, part of what sort of keeps you there is that you feel like people will want to trade you in for something that's better.
Interesting. Interesting.
You know, that you feel like a collectible that nobody wants and they want, you know.
And you don't want to take that risk.
Your last year's precious moment from Hallmark.
you're not the 2015 Darth Vader with the flashing
exactly.
lightsaber. You're
right.
the 2013.
Right.
Yeah, I get it.
Yep.
So, but then there was one, who was it? Sandra Smith.
That was my next door neighbor.
Right. Yeah. I found her very interesting. She introduced you to masturbation.
Yes.
And pornography.
Yes.
And becomes your closest friend throughout high school. Tell
yes.
me about her.
She was a neighbor of ours, and she was college age when I was young, you know, at that point.
How old were you around that?
We became friendly probably when I went to junior high school, so I was 12, 13.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And she was sort of a rule breaker. She was one of these people who marched to her own drum. She, you know, listened to the, you know, she was listening to musical artists. She was sort of ahead of her time in a
right,
way.
Right, right.
And she invited me over. She rented the movie Caligula.
Right.
You remember the Penthouse?
I remember the movie.
Right.
As I'm reading this, I remember exactly when I watched it, and I remember how.
And there's that orgy scene
yes,
at the end.
Yes.
So she's screening the movie, and I'm sitting on the couch watching it with her, and I start to see these men ejaculating. I'm like, what's that?
Yes.
You know, what's that white stuff coming up?
There was a character in Caligula whose name was Biggest Dickus.
Well, you may be right. Yes. I don't really remember anything about the narrative.
Well, the thing about Caligula was bizarre. Well, it was like the first X-rated film that
right.
I went to go see
right.
in the theater.
And it was actually a legitimate, I mean, it's actually a boring historical drama.
Yeah, yeah.
They just took some
yeah.
penthouse pets at the end yeah, and yeah. added in some porn.
Exactly.
But I mean, Helen Mirren was in it. And,
really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
And Malcolm McDowell. I mean,
Malcolm
it was a legitimate.
Yeah.
Legitimately.
I remember Malcolm McDowell. I remember one of the scenes where, because I thought Caligula is this big, powerful fucking figure, and then he fucks a guy. He not only does he
his
fuck
his fist.
He fucks the guy's wife. He takes the guy's wife and then he fucks him. Was it what just with a fist or
yeah.
did he actually fuck him?
No,
physically?
I think it's just
a fist.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah, all I know is that I was like, oh shit, where I actually as a young man got the visual of, you know, the power.
Right.
A man can have over another man. You know what I mean? It was just, you know, you don't
yeah,
know
no,
what that
it was
is.
A, and to see that at 13, you know, or 12.
Exactly. That's,
you know,
that's
and so when she said, when I said to her, like, what's that white stuff? Like, what's
right,
happening?
She told you about the money shot.
And she said, well, that's the money shot. And so then I thought to myself, gee, I need to go home and see what this is. So that sort of was my.
So then you Googled it. You Googled
well, too bad there wasn't.
There was no.
We didn't have the internet. So I was using underwear catalogs until I was
Sears.
Through high school.
Sears
no,
and
there
Google.
Used to be a. There was an underwear catalog called International Mail.
I remember that.
And
I remember that.
For some reason, it used to come to our house. Like, I guess we subscribed to enough magazines
mm-hmm.
because of my dad's a doctor and in the waiting room.
Mm-hmm.
So we subscribed
with
to everything.
Italian skinny young guys with like Speedo looking.
Yeah. So
boxes.
I used to say if you could tell the religion of the model through his swimsuit or underwear, he was masturbation material for the next couple of weeks.
Interesting.
And I'd wait for the, and I'd steal the catalogs when they'd come through the mail and hide them in my room. And then I would use that to jerk off to.
Josh, do you know who took the International Mail catalog?
Well, fortunately, no one in my house had the body for anything they sold in there, so nobody was looking for that catalog.
Interesting.
Yeah.
We have a caller. Hi, caller.
Hi.
Hey, what's happening? Rosemary Rodriguez.
Well, I wanted to, first of all, Porn Again is an awesome book.
Yes, it is.
Thank you.
Everyone should read it. It's hilarious. It's intelligent. It's about all the things you're talking about. But also, I wanted to get back to that, to ask you a question about the social media stuff.
Jenny,
because a lot of your book is about finding acceptance
right.
For physically who you are, what your body is like, embracing who you are, and finding some peace of mind being and comfort being in your own skin. And part of what I notice in social media is like everyone's presenting a certain image of what their life is and how wonderful and glamorous they are and how everything's like perfect, and everyone's putting out these images like more than ever, more than when we even grew up. And so I was wondering if that affects you today, or if you don't, you know, if you're just caught up in your own stuff, or how do you think that affects other people that are growing up or, you know, coming around to trying to figure out who they are?
Well, you know, I think it's a good question. I think social media is a double-edged sword. I think that, you know, it's a great marketing tool. It's a great way for people to connect. I think there's a lot of great information out there for people. But at the same time, you're right. I think people feel this pressure to keep up with what other people are doing or to create a seemingly glamorous existence for themselves, because the media and the culture sort of tells us that we need to be doing that. We need to be as fabulous as a Kardashian. We need to have Kylie Jenner's lips. We need to have Kim's ass. We need to have, be at the latest party, be at the latest screening. And I think, you know, another thing, it creates these sort of cyber cliques where, you know, people use social media as a yardstick of acceptance. This person followed me. This person unfollowed me. This person doesn't follow me. This person da 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 da. And I want to say, you're a 40 or 50 year old adult. Like, when do we get off of the high school playground and stop worrying about whether somebody's sitting with us at the lunch table or not? And social media has sort of given, you know, an open mic to some of these mean girls.
Yeah.
And listen, you know, I'm the first person to have something. You know, Rosemary, how judgmental I am. And I'm the first person to have something to say about everything. But I don't think that, you know, a lot of it's just my humor. It's not mean-spirited, and it's not in an attempt to hurt somebody else. And I'm also try to be very considerate about people's feelings and, you know, including people in things, because I was somebody who was excluded.
Right.
But I think that it's a really dangerous proposition in that way, and that I think you find a lot of people who are really affected by it. You know, I think, you know, anything, just the word social by its very nature, you know, implies a lot of things. And I think there's a dark side to that too.
Yeah.
Well, I just think it's important that people know your book is about so many different things.
Right,
and
yes.
I actually think it's a book that, like, younger girls and younger guys should sort of embrace, like, what you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, we're definitely playing up the jokey and sexual elements of the book, but it really is a coming-of-age story and about sort of stepping into your own and being yourself at whatever age you feel comfortable doing that. And it's really never too late to be authentic is sort of the thrust of the book. So, you know, if people can discover that at 15 or 16, great. And if they discover it at 50, great. But, you know, the title Porn Again shouldn't scare anyone away.
Right. I think the point I wanted to make is that There's a lot of heart to the book, and the fact that you have so much humor in it, and that you're so honest about your sex life, about all of that. It's just, it's such a special book, and I just think, you know, everyone would benefit from reading it, and I just love listening to you guys.
Well, I appreciate that.
Thank you. Thank you for calling in.
Okay, bye.
All bye. Right.
She's so sweet. She's my number
one of the best people on this earth.
She is one of the best
people.
I mean,
truly.
No, I know.
I'm such a good person.
I'm a lucky guy. Yeah. She's a sweetheart.
There are not that many salt of the earth people.
Yeah, yeah. She's a salt of the earth for sure.
And what's interesting is somebody in, you know, who has moved in Hollywood, who can sort of stay grounded and still, you know, keep her own.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Keep
yeah.
her own sense of self. Yeah. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, it is. It is amazing. It's because, I mean, for the most part, it's where we come from. You know, it's like you talk about social media a little while ago. Mm-hmm. You're talking about how, you know, people's identities are shaped
absolutely.
By that. For instance, I remember when I first had my Facebook account, I may not have been in the best place spiritually or emotionally. Right? But you're on Facebook. You don't know what the fuck Facebook's about. You go on Facebook and everyone's doing so great. Everyone's like, oh shit. Like as a stand-up comedian, wow, this guy's performing here. This guy's doing this. This guy's doing that.
I mean, we present the life that we want people to think that we're having. I mean, how much fun would it be to look at a Facebook feed of me sitting in my pajamas, sitting at the computer typing my next book?
Which is how everyone is for the most part. And I remember feeling like so fucking inadequate. Mm-hmm. Like to the point where I wasn't feeling good, meaning I wasn't in a good place mentally, right. emotionally. That
just compounds.
Fucking compounded yeah. that. And I was like, fuck.
But what I find fascinating is you find these women and men who are, you know, 40 years old, 50 years old, 60 years old, people who you'd think would be a little more evolved and a little more mature, who will, and I mean, I can't tell you, you know, there were people who took issue with some of the things that I wrote in my book.
Because what did you
people
say? Don't evolved?
Evolved.
Ain't nobody got time for that.
People took issue with your book.
There are people who took issue with the frank nature of my book and the fact that I was so out there and so honest and sort of shined a light on things. And, mm-hmm. you know, I always say, number one, if you'd like to be written about more warmly, perhaps you'll think about it before you behave next time.
Or own it.
But, or own it. But, you know, some of those people unfollowed me or, right. you know, I actually wrote a piece for the Huffington Post called Unfollowed into Happiness. And, you know, it was the idea that it basically did weed out a lot of people in my life who weren't really there for me or weren't right. entirely supportive and, right. you know, weren't real friends, which is another theme of this book, is sort of shedding the people who are not true in your life
right.
and sort of coming out on the other side, knowing what your boundaries are and what kinds of people you want to have around you. And, you know, these people would unfollowed me, stopped liking my pictures on Instagram, would like just certain pictures on Instagram. Nothing, you know, you could start to see the patterns.
Right.
And, you know, you can either fall under that and let that kind of high school behavior get to you, or mm-hmm. you can let those people fuck off.
Right. Right.
You know, and I just choose not to be right. in the middle of that anymore. If you follow me, great. If you don't follow me, fine. If you don't like it, sit and spin. Not interested.
Right. Right. Talking about Hollywood, I mean, you're from Florida.
Right.
And according to your book, you did a couple of internships and then you yeah. wound up coming out to Hollywood under the guise of a job.
Right.
You didn't get the job, but then
it was a real true Hollywood experience. An E true Hollywood experience.
E true Hollywood moment.
I went to New York working for a major movie studio. Mm-hmm. And I, after a couple of years, wanted to transfer to the LA office. And through a number of interesting circumstances, which are in the book, you know, they agreed to the transfer and I get out to LA to find out that they had never really gotten the whole thing approved the way it was supposed to be. And there right. was no job for me.
So therefore, Josh is, hi, welcome to In-N-Out. Would you like some onions with that?
Well, fortunately, that never happened because there was quite an email trail. And there wasn't as much email then. It was I had tapes, phone messages. And, you know, they got concerned about perhaps a lawsuit and the job was reinstated. But can you imagine? It was like, welcome to Hollywood. You know, my first job, I was totally innocent in the whole wow. thing.
How old were you then?
24.
Wow.
24.
And you come out here, you don't know anybody.
Nobody.
Wow.
So I get out here and I have rented an apartment and wow. had my car shipped out here wow. and set up a whole life out here the week before to find out the day before that there really was no job for me.
Right.
Now, of course, it got, you know, reinstated right. and I went on to have a great career.
Too bad Facebook wasn't there because you could have just taken phony photos of you like driving a Porsche, like that's your new job.
Exactly.
And, you know, people would have said, fuck, Josh. Exactly. But you fast forward.
There was no Facebook.
Right.
I mean, we were just starting to use email. It was great that right. we could attach things.
Right. You're right. You're right.
You know, so
yeah,
it was that was really a wake up moment.
Yeah.
I mean, that was sort of, you know, it's interesting how your first experience with something can really color, you know, how the rest of your time, you know, and I think that was sort of the first bad taste in my mouth with
like,
some of that
like
stuff.
Like a foretelling of how things were going to be or of things to come, so
right.
to speak.
And then, you know, I went to work, you know, in subsequent jobs and with some pretty horrible people in mm-hmm, Hollywood. Mm-hmm, and, mm-hmm. you know, you just sort of, as somebody who had been so marginalized growing up and feeling like I wasn't good enough to then come up against these people who are essentially socially acceptable bullies.
Right.
You know, it just really wasn't yeah. good for my psyche.
Yeah. What was you took on, you were working on Guiding Light and then...
Yeah, that was as an intern.
That was an intern. And mm-hmm. then you were working...
And then I was at CBS News as an intern.
CBS News. But where were you where you were around like Cher and...
That was as an... Cher I met when I was interning at CBS.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And so... Yeah. From there, how did you get into, PR stuff? I mean, how did you get into that?
Well, that was my first, you know, I started sending out right before I was determined to have a job in my field,
which was
communications and marketing for entertainment. Mm-hmm. When I left school, you know, so many of my friends were in these, you know, they were just going to take whatever jobs they could to till something. And I was way too proactive for that. So I started sending letters and resumes, you know, on stationery, by email.
Sure.
Sending letters out to all the studios and people who I wanted to work with. And I was very lucky at the time.
Right.
You know, and people looked at it and looked at the letters and looked at the resume. And I had done weren't doing internships at that time. So here I was, you know, 21 years old and had already interned at CBS News and interned on a national soap opera and had written for a newspaper, you know, by the time I was 21. So to those people, it was impressive and it landed me a job right away.
At CBS?
So, no, that in the CBS was an internship. A movie studio was the first job. As I say in my book, a revered family brand.
Well, I remember thinking, Josh is I know you for a while.
Right.
So I think of you as a very, very nice person, right? But what is nice?
Some would argue.
No, I'm saying, I mean, you're, believe me, I know you have a 50 million characteristics of your personality, but you're a genuinely nice person. You're a genuinely nice person. You're very smart, very smart.
Thank you.
You're extremely witty, very funny, as I mentioned before. But there was something that happened, and I said, wow, Josh is a classy guy, right? Because that's not something that I thought right off the bat. I'm sure you are. That's who you are.
That's something that you see in someone's behavior.
Right. That's something, but that's something that you've been for a long time, right?
I think my parents did a good job.
Your parents
did
a great job. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'll tell you when. I don't know what it was. Maybe we got you a birthday gift or Christmas. I don't know what the fuck it was. But you sent a thank you note on stationery.
Oh, right? That's important to me.
That is so fucking classy, dude. That's what separates, you know, people from people. And that's an old school thing. You know what I mean? That's, your parents must have taught you that.
Yeah, I mean, that's very important to me. I think that there's an art to a handwritten note.
I agree.
You know, people don't do it anymore. And I think it really says to somebody, I think when you really appreciate what somebody's done for you, or the way somebody's behaved towards you, I think it's really important to let them know that it means something.
And
if I'm writing a note, it means something.
I agree. I was having a discussion with a friend, my sister's friend. I went to an opening night play, and my sister's friend has a daughter, and she was talking how she doesn't need to actually, her handwriting sucks. Mm-hmm. And who cares? I mean, what's the big deal? She doesn't need to write. And I said, actually, she does need to write. Mm-hmm. And she was like, why? I mean, there's tablets. I said, let me tell you something. The problem, and this is, I know I'm a cynical fuck and a pessimist.
How old do we sound right now?
I don't care.
Jenny's about to pull in a walker with tennis balls at the bottom.
I don't really care. The truth of the matter is, you know, under the guise of technical and technological advancements, we all too often just go with the flow electronically, right?
Right. Well, that's become acceptable.
You were just saying, oh, back then, you know, we were just barely getting into emails and learning how to put attachments. Next thing you know, Twitter is nothing. Instagram, blow me gram. You have 50. You can't keep up with all this shit.
Right.
Right. So
there's a piece of the human experience that disappears.
It's disappeared.
And it's unfortunate. It's the same way kids don't know to pick up a newspaper. You know, everything comes from online.
It's unfortunate. And I'm going to say, last Friday, and then I'll get into this, how important it is. Well, I told her, she does need to write. I mean, I take notes.
Right.
I write on paper.
Look at that.
I type stuff on my computer as well, and I print it out. But sometimes I don't want to fucking get on the computer and write something.
I agree.
And I write notes. And I have millions of papers with notes. And I think there's something, there's an art to that. There's something that connects you, the being, to what you're doing. You know, it's like playing a record on a record player. I mean, there's nothing like fucking picking up a 12-inch vinyl, putting it on, it's another experience.
Well, and all of those things are coming back now. You can't pass a store that's not selling vinyl.
Everything comes full circle, right. And you can't get away from the true originality of something. You can't, right? So last Friday, Starbucks. Mm-hmm. Had an internal computer glitch. Now, all of their computers, all of their point of purchase cash registers, which I was reading an article how the cash register is no longer. You remember?
It's like a computer pad, like a tablet.
It's a tablet, but it's also it's a point of purchase terminal that's connected, you know, network of all Starbucks into corporate headquarters. So there was a glitch and all fucking Starbucks stores shut down because their point of sales, their i.e. electronic cash registers, were not functioning. So they were not able to transact do business.
I mean, that's a major like nationwide blackout.
Hello.
They should definitely make a movie of that starring The Rock.
So I read that, and then I went to Starbucks the other day, and I said, well, wasn't it a couple weeks ago? And the guy said, no, that was last Friday. And what happened was we just gave out free coffee for the first couple hours, and then we just closed down. But there's a big problem with our society. How many people do you know actually carry cash in their pocket?
I do.
You do?
My mother still makes me have an emergency $100 somewhere in the house.
If I was to guess if you had cash in your pocket or not, I would say you probably do.
I do.
And that has nothing to do with being old. Like you said, oh, how old do we sound? It's not old. It's fucking practical, man.
Listen, you're not going to convince me otherwise. I mean, I still am the idiot who has a landline. Because I think, you know, you never know what's going to be working,
Jenny,
or not working.
Bring the walker with the tennis balls. Now I'm going to. No. Listen. I had an experience. You know, I just went to Cuba a month and a half ago. I had an experience. I went to Rite Aid, okay, to get whatever. I was thinking, maybe Pepto-Bismol, whatever. So that if something happens, you're there. Remember you said you just packed. You're going to New York tomorrow.
I go to New York and I pack like there's not a Duane Reade on every
corner. You're going to Cuba.
I might be in Guam. I don't know.
Well, I was kind of, for lack of a better word, going to Guam.
Right.
And, let's say you get acid, you know, whatever. So I'm in there. I get a couple of things.
I love that that's what you're preparing for.
Well, upset stomach because I'm going to eat, right? I know one thing I'm going to do is I'm going to eat. And I'm going to drink water, so you don't know.
Right.
And so I'm at Rite Aid, and this is long fucking line. I'm like, what the fuck? Don't tell me, because I don't have, this is the night I was leaving. I mean, my time is accounted for. Yeah. You know what I mean? I don't got time for fucking 30 minutes in a line.
You didn't travel that far for Rite Aid.
No. So I'm in there, the big long line. I said, let me go find what I'm looking for. Hopefully by the time I come back, the line will dissipate. I go a long line, and I'm going, what's going on here in my mind? Where one of the cash registers is next. The guy at the front of the line says, are the credit card terminals working? She goes, no, just cash only. I didn't put two and two together, but I'm looking at everyone. No one's moving. I said, she said next. They all turn around, look at me, right?
Because nobody has cash.
They're looking at me like I'm a fucking freak. And I'm like, and the guy in front of me says, the terminals are down. I said, so you mean to tell me everyone on this line, no one has cash? They all look at me like, I said, fuck this. I went to the front of the line. I went to the cash register, and I have cash, right? I pay for it. I said to the guy, I said, I can only imagine when everything, when there's a national blackout on fucking computers and bank accounts, where people are going to go.
Well, you know, look, we're such slaves to technology, you know, and we sort of have been conditioned now to operate that way. And people do, like when the internet's down, you know, people kind of leave work. Like, well, the internet's down. Let's go home.
There's
nothing else to do.
I mean, I got nothing to report on Facebook. Fuck it. I guess there's nothing to do. Let's go home.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's sort of, I hear what you're saying, you know, and I, you know, my mother always said, you know, I'm leaving tomorrow. Now, of course, my Jewish mother has already called me tonight to make sure I have cash to travel
with. Of course. And here's the irony.
Even taxis now take
credit. Here's the irony. In Cuba, there's no ATMs, and they don't take credit cards from U.S. So you need to have all the cash that you plan on taking and wow. that you plan on spending. And how do you do that when you've never been there? How do you know how much you need to spend, right? right?
How do you know if you're going to have acid reflux?
Yeah, exactly, and you need to pay $100 for a tablet. Yeah. Well, I could sell those tablets on the streets because they can't get them. Anyway, I have cash in my pocket always, and then I have backup cash in my wallet in a little slip.
In case the cash needs cash.
In case I run out of the cash got that it. I have, backup cash. And then I got cash in the house just in case. I do. But here's the biggest misconception that people have. They think, oh, well, I have a few hundred dollars stashed in the house. But guess what? If there's an earthquake or there's some godforsaken, you know, natural disaster mm-hmm. and you only have $100 bills and you need water, guess how much the water is going to cost?
$100.
$100.
Well, I mean, they tell you to have small bills.
Small bills, yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I always keep, you know, in case of
an emergency. I do too.
But you know what? I'm not somebody who'd ever be good in an emergency.
But you have
I mean,
to,
I just throw my hands up and
you have
I don't
to plan
know.
Some. You have to have some planning.
I agree, but you
have
to. You know.
So we're coming to the end of the show. You mentioned newspaper earlier. I have to say that I just got my first photo assignment. I got a cover on the Toluca Times.
I love the Toluca
Times.
Isn't
that amazing?
Yes.
I'll get you a copy. It's on the it's the April 29th edition of the Toluca Times. My friend Sal Rodriguez, who sometimes comes and co-hosts the Nestorius Public Radio Show and also had his own podcast called Sorry You Met My Mother. Really good guy. I want to give a big up to Sal. Big up, Sal, you motherfucker, yeah. He got me a little gig, and I'm doing photo assignments for the Toluca Times.
That's awesome.
Which is something that I've done. I've done, for you know, one of the many hats I've worn, photography, but now I can start building up some sort of a...
Now you have professional credit.
Now I have professional credit.
I mean, you are on your way, Nestor.
All because of a newspaper, a small community newspaper.
You know what? Everything starts with a dream.
Everything starts with a dream. So, give us your website. Before you do that, just wrap up, because we went all over the place about your book, but your book is about empowerment in a way. Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, it's a memoir. It's like I said to Rosemary, it was, you know, it's a coming of age memoir that, you know, sort of, you know, and a sort of a sexual awakening late in life. And, you know, it's fun. It's celebrity affairs and porn stars and hookers.
We didn't get into celebrity affairs and your porn star
and
hookers.
And celebrity friends and plastic surgery.
But you say, here's the thing.
I had a plastic surgery addiction, eating problems. It's covered. It's like Days of Our Lives.
When Josh looks in the mirror, he sees a chest that is a little broader than it had been in a while, complimenting the small belly that could benefit from daily sit-ups. The faint lines on his forehead matched by light crow's feet around his eyes, show some wear and worry. He isn't flawless, but he can finally live with that. At last, he accepts himself as he is.
Right. I mean, the book sort of comes to that, but the truth is, you know, I never like to say that I have it all figured out. I think anybody who tells
you
that
is,
that's not true.
You don't have it, right.
I don't. I mean, it's just you sort of, you know, you do the best you can and you try to not repeat the mistakes that you made.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, nobody's perfect.
But
nobody,
you're okay with who you
I'm
are.
I'm okay with who I am.
Right
finally
now,
at 40.
Right here. You're
at
okay.
At 40, yes.
Shit.
For the first time.
That's... Big the fuck up for being okay with who you are, man!
Okay.
Okay! Anyway, so what's your website? How can people find your book?
The book is available, you know, on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, in most Barnes & Noble stores, The Grove, Studio City, you know, if you're in L.A., but... All over.
Your book is always on the shelf next to some big highfalutin.
It all
report.
Depends on which store. But I love when my book is next to something that's religious. Like it's next to like Finding Jesus and Porn Again. That
when
nothing
have,
makes
when
me
you
happier.
You have a picture of a translucent multicolored cock.
Yeah.
blocking yes. your pelvis, your
so,
private parts.
Yes, you said, but people can go to www.joshsabarra.com. And at Twitter, I'm at Josh Sabarra.
There you go.
Yeah.
So buy the book. Follow Josh at Josh Sabarra on Twitter and like him on Facebook.
Yeah, go
Josh
for
Sabarra.
It.
And while you're doing that, follow me on Twitter.
Would you please?
Would you follow me
on Twitter?
I really
need to get Nestor a little bit.
At Nestorius NYC. That's my Twitter handle. And like us on Facebook, man. We're coming up on our 100th episode of Nestorius Public Radio.
That's going to be quite... What are you planning for that?
I think, you know, I haven't...
Strippers?
I haven't had a drink or drug. I think I'm going to smoke crack on the air. I think that's what I'm going to do. You know?
That's not a visual thing. People just need to hear it. They don't need to see it. Oh, wait, no. You can see this.
Yeah, you can see this. This is live. I don't know what I'm going to do for my 100th.
I think maybe a cake and a stripper would be great.
A cake and a stripper? Well, we'll talk about that. Maybe you'll help me out with that. But Facebook / Nestorius, that's my Facebook page. And then Nestorius Public Radio is the radio's Facebook page. Like the page. Hit me up on Facebook. You know, holla at your boy. Keep tuning in. Download all that shit.
Shit, so y'all gotta encourage me the whole way along. Ow. I ain't doing nothing but talking shit.